Good morning, everyone. It's Debbie DeGroat. Welcome to the Thursday Masters Call. I'm so excited about the topic today. I think you guys have heard me talk about this one before, the six ways to persuade. Well, I read the other day, and I think I've shared this with all of you before, that the average person who drives to work in the morning, who turns on their computer, who looks at their phone, who watches a little bit of TV, they're on average hit with 60,000 high-powered ad messages in a day. So we're just being bombarded all the time. So how do we sort it out? How do we make these decisions on the spot to do what we do? Well, it comes back to the six ways that people are persuaded. Now, I don't want to jump ahead of myself. I'll save my Walmart example for a few minutes, but let me back up one more thing, too, and just say, obviously, it is never our intention as great salespeople to trick people into doing things that they have no interest in doing. That's not why we learn to persuade. The reason we learn to persuade is we're selling a big-ticket item. So they don't come to you unless they actually have an interest in buying or selling, right? You're not going to talk your own mother into buying a $500,000 house even though she loves you, right? If she doesn't want to buy it. So I think if we start from the foundation of we have good integrity, we provide great service, we listen and consult with these customers and clients, we know what they're looking to accomplish. And our goal is to help them achieve their goal. And you guys have heard me. I think I said it last week. One of my favorite affirmations, my job as a great salesperson is to help people overcome their natural fear and hesitation to achieve the goal that they have set. See, we've studied personality styles. So what we know is that a high D personality, they make decisions very quickly. They're fire and then ready aim. So, boom, they make a decision. So you may not need a lot of persuasive technique on a high D when you've found the right property or you've presented the right listing proposal. They may be relatively easy to close. But then if we take a look at the high I, that influencer personality, also, they're pretty emotional, and not emotional in a boo-hoo, I'm going to go cry in the corner kind of way, but emotional, you know, very energetic, very dramatic. Yeah, let's do it. They're also a very strong personality, a little bit easier to persuade them to make a decision. But then when we get into the high S, more steady, more amiable, the high C, more analytical, these two groups really struggle with making a decision, even when they know it's the right thing. You know, a friend of mine said to me the other day, my husband is so analytical, he cannot make a decision which parking space to park in. I have to tell him every time, make a choice. Right? So we know we're dealing with lots of things going on in their life. We know we're dealing with a lot of fear and anxiety because these are very big decisions that we're asking them to make. We know that these decisions are outside of their normal comfort zone. They're not knowledgeable in our industry. So there's a lot of fear and hesitation that goes along with that. And then we know that inside of that, their personality style may predispose them to really get stuck when it's time to move forward. And sometimes their hesitation can be so incredibly harmful, right? So if we take away from this the fact that we want to make a sale, take that off the table. If we take away from it the fact that you're going to earn a commission, let's pretend for just a moment that you are a sales social worker, that you're being paid a salary and your whole goal, your whole job is to help these people achieve their goal. See, I think sometimes you'd be a lot more aggressive in persuading them. I think sometimes for some of you, you get a little bit caught up in the guilt of, oh, I hate to be a pushy salesperson. How about just do the right thing? So for an example, if I'm showing a young couple a home and I know they love it, and I also know that there are not many options available for them to purchase, and I say, you know, if you don't make a decision today, I know there will be multiple bids. I know this home will be sold, and I honestly do not have anything else that I can show you at all in this price point that will come close to this property. So you need to do the right thing, and you need to go ahead and you need to sign the contract right now. Now, which of the six ways to be persuaded did I use there? Scarcity, right? This is the only home. There are no others to show you, and it's either move it or lose it, because this is it. Now, see, it's true. It's right. It's helpful. It's the right thing to do. Now, they still may choose not to buy it. That's up to them. But my job as a salesperson is to give them every opportunity to achieve their goal. So I need to tell them the truth. Now, if you're a high D or high I, you'd have no problem saying that to a buyer. However, if you're a high S or a high C, you might say, oh, no, I could never say that. I don't want to be that pushy. Think about it this way. If this were your best friend, if this were your relative, and you really wanted to help them in that situation, what would you tell them to do? Right? So let's think about the fact that, sure, you earn a great living, and yet what you do truly does contribute to people's lives every day, but sometimes they just need that little gentle nudge across the line so that they can achieve their goal. I'm going to take it out of your world and put it in ours for a moment, because I have our sales team listening in on these calls just like you do, because we all need to get better at selling. And so let's say, for example, that a client or client-to-be calls in today and says, you know what, I'm in complete breakdown in my business. I'm working crazy hours. I'm not achieving the goal that I have set. I don't even know what my prospecting sources should be. I'm so afraid the competition, they're running over me. I'm not winning in my listing appointments. And we can help them. I have great coaches, great programs, calls like this, scripts, resources. We are passionate about what we do. So if I say, well, you should sign up for coaching, and they say, well, I don't know if I can do that. I don't know if I can invest. Well, I don't know. It might be hard. I think I have to think it over. If my sales team let them get off the phone without helping them see the reality that without this, they will lose opportunity, because we believe that. But see, to believe that, I have to know we have good coaches. I have to know that I have salespeople who care, that our culture is one of caring. But see, I know you guys are like that. I know you care about these people. So if you care, help them make their decision. And that's where we come back to our six ways. So Robert Cialdini, who's like the godfather of neuroscience, has written extensively about these six principles. And he said that these are basically the buttons that great salespeople push to move their customers into action. So let's start with number one, reciprocity. Okay, so let me give you an example. I was at the airport the other day, you know, getting on the plane. And so let's say, for example, that as I'm boarding the plane, my suitcase is really heavy and I'm trying to get it up into the overhead, and someone steps up behind me, puts it up there for me, arranges it, closes the door. Right away, I get this feeling of, well, I'm grateful, but it's also this feeling of being a little uncomfortable. Because unless we're sociopaths who have, I think, no emotion or conscience at all, unless we're sociopaths, normal people, all of us, feel that rush of, I need to repay that favor. Now, maybe repaying that favor is simply saying thank you. But I saw this the other day, and I saw, as the person did this, I saw the lady turn around and say, here, take my free drink ticket. Please, go ahead, use it. I'm not going to use it. She couldn't wait to get that out of her hand and into his hand, because she wanted to repay the favor. So how do you apply this to your business? You guys have been doing it for years. You, on your marketing piece, you offer a free report, or you offer a free consult, or you offer a free market evaluation. You're giving your time, your energy, and your talent. Okay, now does that ensure that that prospect is going to fall right into line and buy from you without a bit of hesitation? No, of course not. Maybe it's not the right time. Maybe it's not what they want to do. But what it does ensure is that you buy yourself a little bit more time. Maybe a few extra minutes to speak with them. Maybe a little bit more of an open mind to hear your proposal. But they're going to feel that they have the need to give you something back. Okay, so is it always a gift? No, not necessarily. So I'll give you another example. Let's say that you are talking to a potential seller on the phone. And maybe you've met with them and they said they would list with you at some point, and you say, well, you know, let's talk about it. Maybe now would be a better time. And they're resisting. No, I don't want to. No, I'm not ready. No, I'm not interested. No, I'm not going to do it right now. So, Mr. Seller, here's what I'm going to do for you. I'm going to let you get off the phone now because I hear clearly that you're not ready to do this. Here's, though, what I'm going to ask of you. Yeah, sure, what? See, theory of reciprocity. You're giving him something. You're letting him get off the phone. You're asking for something in return. May I ask that when you are ready, you will at least commit to giving me the opportunity to interview with you? Well, no, I can commit to that. Yeah, sure. Great. So I have your promise on that. Yeah, absolutely. Good. I appreciate your promise. Because, see, when you say promise, and they promise, 90% of the time, most people will keep that promise that they made to you. Okay, so let's see. What would be another way to use the theory of reciprocity? So I'm doing a deal for you, and things are falling apart. It's a disaster. I jump in, and I fix it. Right? And I fix it. And you're excited, and you're thrilled, you're so happy, and you're saying, thank you, I'm so glad, thank you, thank you. And I say, no problem. Happy to do it. Okay, but see, sometimes we stop there. Please, don't stop there. Instead, I want you to go one step further, and I want you to say, I'm so happy to do it. There's a small favor I'd like to ask of you. Sure, anything, what? Because remember, they want to repay the favor. I was wondering who in your close circle of friends or family today might need my help that I could reach out to. Now, of course, we're asking, or at least I would hope, that we're asking for referrals from them all the time. But see, here's the difference. Now I'm asking at a moment where they really want to pay me back. Okay, so theory of reciprocity, it's a good one because human nature, we feel an instinctive need to reciprocate when someone does something for us. We want to do something in return for them. All right, let's go to the next one. And I didn't list these in any particular order of importance. And I will open up the line for your questions, but I want to get us a nice, good recording because I would encourage you to listen to this over and over again. All right, number two, consistency. I wrote in your study guide that we all like to believe, and maybe I could add hallucinate, that we are completely consistent and logical and practical in everything we do. And really, we're not, none of us. We're all very emotional creatures, you know, 90% of what we do. We've learned that together on these calls, and we'll revisit in the future, is by emotion. 90% of what we do is not our analytical. I don't even care how analytical you are. So even if you are a triple high analytical, still 90% of what you do is based on emotion. And then you just find a few more reasons to justify it logically than maybe the rest of us do. So in this consistency principle, it really works when you go right along with their belief. So if I'm presenting an offer, let's say I have a very reasonable offer that I'm presenting to my seller, and my seller is being, or let's say has been in the past, very unreasonable. And I'm really thinking, all right, how am I going to get him to open up his mind and see that this is a very good offer? Well, maybe I'll use consistency. You know, Mr. Seller, because you are a very good businessman, and because I know that you've studied the market and we've looked at all the data together, I'm certain you're going to see that this is a realistic offer and we should attempt to work with it. See, I told him he was smart, on top of the market, studied everything he could, all of this great knowledge. Now I'm certain, which is an NLP word, right? I'm certain that you will realize, another great NLP word, that it makes sense to attempt to make this offer work. Now, what we also have studied in the past is pacing and leading. So just a quick reminder, and some of you are going, what is that? We'll come back around to it in the future. For those students who have been with me for a while, you might have recognized the pace, 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 lead. Because you are a good businessman, because you have studied the market, and because we've reviewed the data together, I'm certain you'll realize, see, now comes the lead. So pace, 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 now the lead. I'm certain you'll realize that it makes absolute sense to make this offer work. Right? So you just told them how perfectly consistent they are, how smart they are, and the thing is, now they're going to do their best to live up to that image. Okay, so let's go to number three, social proof. People prefer to be led or to follow. Most of them will not make decisions without the input from others. Okay, so here's a really crazy thing I read in one of the NLP books. They said that if one of us, heaven forbid, fell down in the middle of a park, busy, crowded park, and we're laying there on the ground having a heart attack, that a crowd would gather, and most likely, unless there's a medical professional in the crowd, most likely the crowd is going to stand and watch you die. Why is that? You know, we've heard of the pack mentality, the herd. Well, this is a true fact. Now, if one person steps out of line and starts to assist, others will follow that person and will also assist, but they will wait unless there's a leader, strong leader in the group, or a medical professional. And they actually train. And I asked my sister-in-law, who's a nurse, is this true? And she said, yes. She said they actually teach them in nursing school that if they're in a crowd of people and something like that happens, that they need to identify a specific person and say, hey, you in the red shirt, call 911. Because otherwise people will just stand in a pack. They're waiting for social proof. So how do you use social proof in your business? Testimonials, right? So some of you saw Boris Kolodov's video, one of our clients, and Boris talked about he came to us at the end of 2013, and Boris is a great producer, and he said, you know, I keep earning every year $750,000, and I don't want to work more, but I want to break $1 million. I need some coaching to help me do that. So we worked with Boris throughout the year of 2014. Not only did Boris break $1 million, Boris closed $1.5 million with $200,000 pending, and he did not work any more than he usually does. So you see, Boris's written or video testimonial is social proof. Because while Boris's production may be higher than some of yours, Boris is just a licensed agent like you. He's just been at it a little longer, and he's got some great farms and marketing tools, and you can watch his video and find out more about that. It's on our website. But, you know, he is up here. He is part of your group, and you see proof that that worked for him which would make you, if you were a stranger to Excellium, more likely to feel comfortable to sign up for coaching. So if you're out there in your farm marketing yourself and on your postcards, you're putting testimonials from clients that are happy with your service. Maybe you have an expire that says, I was listed 3 times, and they came in and listed my property, sold it in a week for exactly the price I wanted. So please do not underestimate the power of social proof testimonials on your website and in some of the other places that you may market. Now, how do you collect these client testimonials? Well, I would hope that we're all calling our clients at the end of the transactions and saying thank you. You know, my script goes something like this. You know, Mr. Seller, I know you had a lot of choices. I really appreciate you choosing us. And I hope that you were satisfied with our service. And I pause, because if they weren't, I want to give them a chance to vent that so that I can correct it, improve it, and win them back as a client. But of course, for most of you, they're going to say, yes, I was delighted. It was great. Terrific. I'm so glad you were happy. Now, I know you're busy. I don't want to ask you to write a letter of reference. I would simply like to ask, if you would please, would you give me a quick quote? How you felt about the service, working with me, and if you don't mind, I'd like to write it down and read it back to you, and if I may, could I use it in print? Oh, yeah, sure, that's fine. So they tell you. You write it down, you read it back to them, now you have their testimonial. But here's what we also have. We ended that transaction with the anchor of them telling you how phenomenal you are, right? That's great. But then what did we also do? We just opened the door for our theory of reciprocity, because they're saying you were so great, this was so terrific, you did so much for us. Thank you so much for that, Mr. and Mrs. Seller. Now, while we're on this subject, since I no longer have you as a client because you're not going to move for a while, can you think of in your close circle of friends and family one name that I should reach out to today that I might be able to help? See, they just told me I'm great, so they're going to leave the transaction remembering that. I got my testimonial that I can now utilize. And I use the theory of reciprocity to dig in and ask for a referral, because they can help you. They do know people. They just get busy. They have a lot of stuff on their mind. They don't try very hard. But with that theory of reciprocity, they're going to try just a little bit harder. Now, you can even, how would I say, I don't want to use the word slant. That's not the right word. But you can format, maybe that's a better word, the testimonial in the direction you want it to go by guiding them a bit. So, for example, I could say, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Seller, if you wouldn't mind giving me a testimonial, I'll just write it down. You know, I know that the house was on the market 3 times, didn't sell, you know, then I came along and we sold it in a week and got the price you wanted. That would be helpful for others to hear who might be struggling through what you're struggling through. So would you mind speaking a little bit about that and how that felt? See, I can guide. There's my word. I can guide them to the testimonial words that I want to have pop, because they're true, right? They're true words. They're things that you actually accomplish for them. All right, so let's go to the next one, liking. If they are repelled and annoyed by you, it's going to be tough to persuade them. I was at an event, and I won't tell you when or where, because maybe you were there, because I never want to, you know, name drop bad things, but I was at an event, and there was a person at that event who was probably one of the worst, most oblivious communicators I have ever met in my entire life. This person talked incessantly. In fact, that word was created for her. Incessantly, about 90 miles an hour, and I'm really not exaggerating. No one could understand a word she said because she talks so fast. She happened to be very smart on a particular topic, and it was a topic most of us are not that good at, and we didn't even understand what she was talking about, the jargon and the things she was saying. And she wasn't even looking at us. She didn't even notice that everybody was bored and repelled by her. She just went on and on and on. And I actually had to put my hand on her arm, take her aside, and tell her to stop it because it was so out of control. Okay, she, as I got to know her, very sweet person, very sweet, and a good heart, and she really wanted to share everything she knew with the group. Here's the problem, though. Nobody liked her, so they're not going to listen. She repelled them because it was all about her. So I'm not saying that you couldn't go into a listing and have the seller not like you and still list with you. That could happen. Maybe it has. It's not very likely, though, and it's not likely to work for you very often. Now, let's look at liking. Okay, liking is not establishing a commonality. So you coming into my house and saying, oh, I love your house, it's so cute. Oh, those are your daughters, they're so cute. Oh, you cook, I cook too. Oh, and I made this recipe last week and it was fabulous and you're going to love it and da-da-da-da-da. That's not what I mean, guys. Let's change the word liking for rapport. I need to be in rapport with that customer or client, or they're not likely to be persuaded. Okay, so how do we gain rapport? It's not by establishing commonality, because quite frankly, they don't care about you. They care about themselves. They don't even know you that well. Even your friends don't care about you as much as they care about themselves. That's human nature, right? 95% of what we think about all day is ourselves. So the way we build rapport is so super simple, all right? And we could go very, very complicated, which we do on these calls, but I'm going to give you the down and dirty, super simple reminder today. Number one, mirror and match. Mirror and match their rate of speech, their tone, and their speech pattern. If you never did anything else in this entire course that I told you to do except this one, you'd be one step ahead. Okay, so I'm going to give you an example. I've shared this with many of you before, but it was just so much a part of my sales life, it's the one that comes to mind. I sold real estate in a market that had a very heavy Asian culture. Chinese, Vietnamese, Japanese, Korean, and so they were very educated, very successful, well-off people buying these very nice homes, but English was not their first language, and most of them were first generation in the country, so their English was very broken. And what I realized is that when I spoke English to them, they had to process it in their brain, flip it into their language, understand it, and then find the words in English to speak back to me. So that took a little time. So I realized I had to slow down. I couldn't talk so fast. I also realized I had to pause and give them time to format their thoughts because it was going to take a little longer for them to get that thought out by the time they processed it from, you know, Vietnamese language into English or whatever their language might be. So I had to calm down, slow down. I also realized that talking louder doesn't make them understand me any better. They're not deaf, just not their first primary language. And then I also realized that if I didn't match their speech pattern, they wouldn't understand my words. So I'll give you an example. If they had very broken English, I wasn't going to say, oh, so do you like this house because it has the pool and the really large lot? Is that what you were really looking for? Because the cul-de-sac location is great, very, very popular. It'll be good for resale. They're going to go, what? I don't know what she said. But if I said, do you like the large lot? Oh, yes, yes, large lot is good. How about the pool? Oh, no, 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 no pool. We don't want a pool. Okay, no pool, no pool, no. How about the cul-de-sac? No, no, I don't like cul-de-sac. No, no, I don't like it. No, cars might run into the house. No. Ah, okay, so no cul-de-sac. And you know what they used to say to me? You know, we don't understand most English-speaking people very well, but we understand you. It was simple. I just mirror and matched their speech pattern. And I slowed down, and I didn't throw in jargon, and I was highly conscious of how I was communicating. Now, is that a trick or technique? No, it's hard, right? It's very hard to be unselfish and to give up being what's comfortable for us and to reach out and to match them. Now, I'm a pretty fast talker, you know. I move, let's go, let's go, let's do, let's do. If you come to my house to list my house and you talk very slowly, we are not in rapport. I am subconsciously not going to like you. I identify you as different. So to be in rapport, mirror and match. Ask great questions about things that are important to them. People want to express. They want to be heard. If you ask great questions, how do you feel about this? What's the most concerning? What will this do for you? How is this going to change your life? If you ask those questions and you really get them to open up, they love it. Now, while they're doing that, you acknowledge and approve. I understand. I can appreciate that. Great. Terrific. People want your acknowledgement and approval, and that needs to become part of your speech pattern. Write them on the wall. Great, terrific, excellent, good for you, really, that's exciting, perfect. I can appreciate that. I understand. Tell me more. Now, you don't want to use the same one over and over. Then it sounds salesy. Sprinkle them in, mix it up, and as you're asking your questions, we, of course, don't want to sound like we're interrogating them, so we can mix in, I'm curious, I was wondering, may I ask? Okay, so we're mirroring and matching. We're asking great questions about things that are important to them. We're acknowledging and approving. If we're with them, we're making eye contact. We can mirror and match the body language. We can give the physical approval, you know, nodding your head, right? So we're doing all of these things to make it all about them. They're going to like you. Stop trying to make them like you. Just demonstrate that you genuinely care, you're not judging them, you're completely interested, and they will like you. Now, you have to be careful. If you get into a situation with an objection, maybe commission or something like that, and it makes you angry, and you change your rate of speech, you change your body language, you change your tone, well, I don't know why you'd ask me to take that commission, you just broke rapport. That's why you got to stay calm and stay in rapport, because remember, when they like you, they will be more likely to move forward. All right, the next one is authority. We've all been trained to respond to authority. That's why when they're pitching products on infomercials, they have a doctor presenting it, because we see them as an authority. It's in the Wall Street Journal. We assume that Wall Street Journal is authoritative. When E.F. Hutton speaks, right? So if you're recognized in some major publication and you take a tear sheet from that magazine and you print that out and you write a note on there, thank you so much, couldn't have done it without your help, and you send that to your clients, they go, wow, they were in the, you know, L.A. Times. They must be an authority. So authority is a little bit like social proof, just a higher level. Right, so if you said, for an example, well, authority could be the brand, right, that you're affiliated with, your company. Authority could be a relocation company that sends you a lot of buyer referrals. an authority could be a very heavy hitter in the industry or in the world that utilizes your services. So it's like social proof on steroids. Now, scarcity, the last of the six, and possibly the most powerful. Scarcity is used constantly in advertising. In fact, if you want to have some fun, if you're watching TV tonight, grab a scratch pad, and I want you to write down, when you watch the commercials, how many times do they use scarcity to persuade you? Last day of the sale. You know, what about the Home Shopping Network, which I never really watch, but flip past it once in a while. Do you know how they do the countdown? Only 99 left, only 34 left, only 22 left. I think they probably could make more of those in China, right? But they're using the scarcity principle. Why do you stand in line on Black Friday to be the first in the door to get those few special deals? So see, scarcity really works. But I was joking with someone today and I said, yeah, but we're probably not going to say, I'm only listing one house this month. So if you want to list with me, you better sign up today. I don't think that would work. So how we would use scarcity in our business would probably be the timing in the market. You know, this is a window of opportunity. Let's beat the crowd to the best properties. We need to hurry before the other bids come in. We've got an advertising campaign launching on Friday, and if you want to be part of it, we need to list the home today. So you see, there are lots of ways that we can use scarcity, and it's a very, very powerful persuader. So in any given sales situation, potentially you'll use 2, 3, 4, maybe more of these in one sales meeting. Now, what I'd also like to have you do, and that's why I want you to print out your study guide, I want you to keep it in front of you when you're prospecting and refer to it. And I also want you to look at it when you're doing your marketing pieces. How are you using those classic six ways to persuade in your marketing pieces?